Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with some information from the National Weather Service warning about extreme storms hitting our region. You've no doubt felt the impact so far today, and they're expected to continue through Tuesday. Hear what you should know, where you can get sandbags, and what precautions you should take in this severe weather, with winds high enough to topple trees. Then, hear why Senator Dianne Feinstein has become the first prominent member of the Senate to say that she believes Russian meddling changed the outcome of our election for president. We'll have a report from the inauguration of Donald Trump today as the 45th President of the United States, and protests going on in Washington, D.C., and here in San Diego. Locally, District Attorney Bonnie DeMontis has announced she will not run for re-election. We'll have a report on today's show. We'll have news about some initiatives introduced by new members of the El Cajon City Council. And on our agricultural report today, hear why some farmers are asking San Diego County supervisors next week for the freedom to grow cannabis. On Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up this week, from a writer's conference to a comedy night film showing to some previews of upcoming events, including Valentine Tees in Julian and more. We'll be re-airing our newsmaker interview today with Estela de los Rios, talking about the severe homeless situation in San Diego and here in East County. And we'll have some fan reactions today to the Chargers bolting to Los Angeles. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a warning from the National Weather Service. A series of strong Pacific storms will be pecking a wallop across Southern California. The storm series began Thursday and will continue through Tuesday, January 24th, bringing flooding of rivers and possible mudslides. The San Diego River may reach 7.5 feet by 6 p.m. this Friday night, causing flooding and road closures at crossings in Mission Valley. The San Luis Rey, Santa Margarita, and Tijuana rivers may also reach flood levels. Residents are advised to prepare and move equipment and animals to higher ground if necessary. Forecasters say this will be the first time since 2010 that the wet weather will have potential to create an extended period of enhanced runoff into area streams and rivers. Soils are expected to become saturated, with most rain later in the storm series becoming runoff. Trees in saturated soil could become unstable and topple. Mountain areas may receive 5 to 10 inches of precipitation, with snow levels down to 4,500 feet over the 6-day storm period. Valleys could get up to 6 inches, coastal areas 4 inches, and deserts up to 3 inches. Very hazardous road conditions are expected in mountain areas across Southern California, with several feet of snow expected above 6,000 feet. Delay travel if possible until after the storm series has passed. Rough seas are forecast along coastal waters, with winds up to 65 knots and swells from 10 to 18 feet, peaking on Saturday. Avoid boating and other water activities. The good news is the wet weather will bring significant relief from the drought, which has already been declared over in more than 40% of California. Southern California officially remains in a drought condition, though the end of the drought declaration statewide may be in sight after the coming drenching.
This is Jonathan Getz with the public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The heaviest rains of the winter, and maybe the heaviest in several years, set to soak our region over the next several days, bringing flash flooding and erosion problems. So the County Department of Public Works, along with CAL FIRE and the County Fire Authority, wants you to know that it's expanded its list of places where residents in unincorporated areas can get free sand and/or bags to help protect their properties. The expanded list includes 15 fire stations and other spots where residents can get free sand and bags, All you have to do is bring a shovel to fill them. And another 29 stations giving out free bags. Because different locations are offering sand and bags, just bags, or are asking people to bring shovels to put sand into bags themselves, people should call ahead to check. Proper use of sandbags can help direct waters away from homes and properties. People who have slopes on their land can use mulch or terrace their slopes and plant ground covers and shrubs to keep them from eroding. For more information about how to be prepared for flooding and to get a list of locations in your area offering sand and or bags, go to the County Office of Emergency Services at readysandiego.org/flooding.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gene Carpenter with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. California Senator Dianne Feinstein told NBC's Meet the Press moderator Chuck Todd on Sunday that after reviewing classified intelligence briefings as a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, she believes Russia definitely intervened in the U.S. presidential election and that Russian meddling altered the outcome of the race. If true, this could call into question the legitimacy of Donald Trump's presidency. Trump won the Electoral College by one of the narrowest margins in history, losing the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes. Multiple U.S. intelligence agencies agree that Russia hacked Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton campaign to leak damaging information, also putting out fake news via Russian-backed propaganda sites to mislead the American public. Feinstein, a Democrat, promised a robust investigation, adding, "I'm certainly not going to leave this in limbo because this is the future of America. It's the future of democracy. And if we can't carry out an election without disinformation being pumped into it by another country, we've got a huge destruction of our system going on." Feinstein is a former chair and vice chair of Senate Intelligence Committee, which is investigating Russian interference in the election, among other issues. She says Russia hacked both parties, but with a clear intent to aid Trump. Whether or not Trump's campaign knew about the hacks ahead of time and who ordered the actions are all questions to be weighed. She voiced confidence that the committee will get to the bottom of Russia's interference in the election and suggested bipartisan whistleblowing if any cover-up is attempted. "I have worked with Chairman Burr for a long time and I believe that this can happen," she said. But Senator Feinstein pledged, "If it doesn't, we will sing out loud and clear." FBI Director James Comey has been the center of controversy for releasing negative information on Clinton's email shortly before the election, while not releasing information from British intelligence suggesting Russia may have compromising material that it intends to use to blackmail Donald Trump. Asked if Comey should be fired, Feinstein said it's too early to draw a conclusion yet on that.
Storm clouds over the nation's capital brought rain as Donald Trump was sworn in this Friday, January 20th, becoming the 45th president of the United States. Trump enters office with the lowest approval rating of any president-elect in history, according to polls done Tuesday by CNN and The Washington Post, which found only 40% approve of the job that Trump has done during his transition time. In his inaugural speech, Trump revived a World War II slogan of "America First." Whether the billionaire businessman and reality TV star can bind together diverse groups alienated during his campaign to fulfill his promise to make America great again or not will be a key challenge for his presidency and the nation. Trump won the Electoral College vote by the narrowest margin in history and lost the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes, gaining election largely by appealing to disillusioned Rust Belt workers hard hit by factory closures, Midwest farm states, and conservative white Southerners. Some have called his presidency illegitimate, citing Russian interference, fake news propaganda, and the disenfranchisement of millions of minority voters. Trump's support from African Americans was in single digits in the election due to his inflammatory statements and views and his record of surrounding himself with racially polarizing figures. The vast majority of Latinos also opposed Trump due to his threats to deport millions of immigrants. He has also lost respect of many women with his flip-flop on issues such as abortion. His derogatory statements toward prominent women and his boast caught on tape of grabbing women's private parts, which would be sexual assault in California, New York, and most other states. Fulfilling some campaign promises may prove challenging. Trump said he would build a border wall and make Mexico pay for it, but Mexico's president has refused to do so. Trump pledged to repeal Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, which the Senate has voted to commence. Yet recent polls now show that most Americans support the Affordable Care Act than oppose it and would rather see it fixed than repealed. Trump's campaign promise to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Change Accord has strong opposition from U.S. allies overseas as well as environmentalists, and even Trump has said he may rethink that position. Undoing trade pacts, another Trump promise, has drawn opposition from states that benefit from trade deals and threats from Mexico over tariffs. Where Trump may be more apt to succeed could be in restoring prosperity to hard-hit areas by wielding his influence in corporate deal-making to muscle some companies into bringing jobs back to America. But he is also plagued by conflicts of interest due to his vast business holdings worldwide, leaving many to wonder just whose interests deals brokered by Trump would benefit. The Hill reported that Trump's budget would slash $10.5 trillion in federal spending over a decade, if approved by Congress. The budget is said to be based on the Conservative Heritage Foundation's blueprint. But even some Trump supporters may be dismayed to learn that includes a 41% cut in Medicare, cuts to Social Security, and cuts to police department funding nationwide, all things Trump said on the campaign trail he would not do. The budget also reportedly calls for the complete elimination of the foundation funding the arts, privatization of public broadcasting, including PBS and NPR, and elimination of Amtrak. The budget also guts funding for programs at the Department of Justice that enforce civil rights laws, violence against women, environmental protections, and legal aid for the poor. Only the military would remain largely untouched in the Trump budget, except for cuts in military health care that are proposed. Many of Trump's cabinet appointees have sparked controversy over extremist views, such as a nominee to head the Environmental Protection Agency who doesn't believe in climate change, an education secretary who has voiced support for dismantling public education, and an attorney general who has opposed civil and voting rights in the past. Trump's choice of Goldman Sachs executives for other key posts have also seemed at odds with some of his campaign appeals to represent Main Street, not Wall Street, and his criticism of Hillary Clinton for her speeches to Goldman Sachs. But other nominees have been more moderate, such as Trump's pick for Interior Department Secretary, a Republican senator who has opposed his party's stance on disposing of public lands and believes climate change is real and influenced by man's activities. Trump has temporarily kept on about 50 Obama administration officials to assure stability and security, but hundreds of positions requiring Senate confirmation to be filled remain open. Trump's polarizing rhetoric and actions are expected to draw some 500,000 protesters over the inauguration weekend. Demonstrators shut down some entrances to the city and clashed with riot police Friday morning. At least 60 Democratic members of Congress refused to attend the inauguration, siding with civil rights leader Congressman John Lewis, whom Trump insulted in tweets over Martin Luther King Day weekend. President Barack Obama did attend, as did former Presidents Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, along with their wives, including Trump's opponent, Hillary Clinton. Former President George H.W. Bush and his wife Barbara are both hospitalized with pneumonia and breathing issues, but had previously said they would not attend due to health concerns. George W. Bush was also not in attendance. After the inauguration, Trump led the inaugural parade featuring thousands of military personnel and, for the first time, a tractor brigade that aimed to connect with rural America. His request for heavy military equipment, including tanks and rocket launchers, raised eyebrows and was turned down by the military. The new president said he would attend only three of the many inaugural balls, two of those limited to his supporters and those who bought tickets, and a third for military personnel, continuing his troubling pattern of limited access to the public and those who oppose his views. Hundreds of thousands of protesters outnumbered Trump supporters at the inauguration itself. The largest group is yet to come, a woman's march on Washington set for Saturday, in which women wearing pink knitted hats with pussycat ears will take a stand for women's rights. Women's marches in solidarity with the National March will be taking place across the nation, including here in San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
Bonnie DeManus has served as San Diego's district attorney for the past 14 years, but this week she announced that she will not seek re-election in 2018. Diagnosed with breast cancer last year, DeManus underwent surgery and radiation and is now cancer-free. But after much soul-searching, Consulting with family and colleagues, she told the San Diego Union-Tribune, "I have other things to do. I've been in public service now for 42 years, and you know, I just thought the timing was right." Dumana, 65, added that she has not decided whether to step down before her term ends, in which case supervisors would appoint an interim replacement. Voters would choose a new DA in the 2018 election. Dumanas has previously said she would support Summer Stefan, a chief deputy for the post. Stefan has headed up divisions handling sex crimes and human trafficking, but has not said whether she will seek the county's top law enforcement job. As DA, Dumanas put emphasis on cracking down on elder abuse, human trafficking, and cyber crimes, also helping released offenders to get job training and life skills to succeed in life and avoid committing new offenses. She handled high-profile cases, notably obtaining a plea bargain from the murderer of abducted teenagers Chelsea King and Amber Dubois. The killer agreed to lead investigators to where he had buried Amber's body in order to avoid the death penalty. Dumanas has prosecuted public officials, including members of the Sweetwater Union School Board, on corruption charges. Mountain Empire School District's former superintendent Steve Van Zandt, known as the Charter School King, pled guilty of felony violation of the Political Reform Act and agreed to repay stipends he had pocketed for each school chartered by the district. Dumanas served as a prosecutor and Superior Court judge before being elected district attorney. She ran for mayor in 2012 but lost that election to Bob Filner. She drew controversy over contributions funneled into her campaign from a Mexican business mogul, Jose Susumo Azano Matsura, but he has denied any wrongdoing. Sheriff Bill Gore praised Dumanas for her handling of criminal justice matters at a time when California has transferred much of the responsibility from the state to local law enforcement for handling low-level criminals. Collaboration is critical, and she's done a great job of that, Sheriff Gore said. Stephen Walter, president of the San Diego Deputy District Attorneys Association, issued a statement calling Dumanas tremendously supportive of every member of this team. He praised her for providing support to fulfill her motto of doing the right thing. But Reverend Shane Harris with the National Association Action Network says he is overjoyed to hear that Dumanas won't seek re-election. He has criticized her for not prosecuting police officers in high-profile cases, including the shooting of Alfred Alongo in El Cajon and the choking unconscious of Robert Branch by San Diego police. Harris states, "Now, as communities of color, we will commit ourselves to seeking a candidate to be the next district attorney of San Diego County. We see this as an opportunity to really be a part of the shifting of an office that we in the civil rights community believe can truly represent the justice we are fighting for. It's a big, big decision," Dumanas, 65, said of her decision to not seek re-election, adding that she feels both profound sadness and profound pride. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is Jonathan Getz with a report on the El Cajon City Council. Formerly operating in lockstep unison, the El Cajon Council picked up two businessmen in the 2016 elections, one supported by neither political party and one supported by the party previously shut out. At the most recent council meeting, both new members brought fresh ideas and sought to have their voices heard. Newly elected Councilman Ben Colasso introduced a proposal to help new businesses by allowing them to post grand opening signs longer than the city currently allows. The second new councilman, Steve Goebel, said that as a franchise marketer, he definitely supported the effort to make the sign code more business-friendly. Councilman Gary Kendrick recalled controversies over signage in El Cajon dating back to the early 70s when city fathers sought to clean up Main Street and prevent it from looking like Las Vegas. "Right now, it looks nice," he said. But after Goebel noted that some new signs are computer-generated to fit in windows, not butcher paper signs hung on buildings in the past, Kendrick voted with Colasso and Goebel to refer the request to staff. Councilman Bob McClellan and the mayor voted against the proposal. McClellan suggested merchants buy less expensive signs for openings, while Mayor Bill Wells noted that even a small change can change the entire look and feel of the city. Council also discussed the homelessness issue. Colasso proposed creating 20 jobs for the homeless. Colasso said that if jobs for the homeless were approved, such as in landscaping and cleaning up graffiti, he would work to get liquor stores to stop selling alcohol to the homeless and serial inebriates. But his motion died without a second. McClellan likened that goal to trying to climb Mount Everest. Kendrick said he pushed for a shopping cart ordinance when he first joined the council 15 years ago, but was told it would violate state law. El Cajon resident Stephanie Harper suggested the city offer storage facilities instead of taking shopping carts away from the homeless. The mayor's proposal, which is ultimately what was forwarded to staff, was to create a subcommittee on homelessness for which the city expects to receive assistance from the county.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they seem hairy?
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. Californians legalized the sale of recreational marijuana with Proposition 64 in November, but farmers can't grow cannabis commercially unless they receive a permit from their city or county. So on January 25th, the Southern California Responsible Growers Council will ask San Diego supervisors to allow farmers freedom to grow marijuana and hemp for sale to dispensaries, but not the public, Channel 6 reports. But so far, supervisors who have staunchly opposed even cultivation for hemp growing in our rural regions have shown no indication that they will support easing the restrictions. Anthony Wagner and Micah Anderson with the Southern California Responsible Growers Council wrote an editorial published in the San Diego Union-Tribune which states, "Our goals are to protect small farms, reducing black market activity, and ending trespass grows on public lands." San Diego currently has more small farms of 10 acres or less than any other county in America, according to the County Farm Bureau. But Supervisor Diane Jacob, who represents East County, told Channel 6, "While the county is taking a hard look at its medical marijuana ordinance, the commercial cultivation of marijuana remains prohibited in our unincorporated area, and there are currently no plans to reconsider it." The stakes are high, no pun intended. California could collect up to $1 billion in taxes and licensing revenues from cannabis sales, New Frontier, a cannabis research firm, estimates. But California's new law requires that local jurisdictions that ban cannabis cultivation will get a much smaller share of fees collected by the state, and they'll receive zero local tax revenues. Opinions in rural East County are mixed on whether cannabis cultivation locally should be legalized or not. One rural planning group member told us privately that she might rather see Star Ranch, a 2,000-acre property up for sale in Campo, used for pot growing rather than developed for housing that could negatively impact rural character and overburden services in schools and communities. A reader on the Ranchers Roost discussion forum online agreed, writing, "Growing cannabis is a good alternative to homes like wine vineyards. It should be regarded as a better alternative to some dangerous medications and certainly better than tobacco and alcohol." But others strongly oppose legal pot growing. Another Ranter's Roost member posted anonymously, "Wow, solar farms, wind turbine fields as far as the eye can see, the Sunrise Power Link, a proposed voltage power regulating substation, and now contemplating marijuana and or hemp farms? I wonder what next they will try to force upon the backcountry. An Alpine can't even get a high school." George Barnett, who serves on the Alpine Community Planning Group, says he views this as a rational land use issue, aside from the property rights at stake. He notes that property owners across the backcountry have put farm and ranch lands up for sale due to the many challenges of farming that typically require, in his words, a heck of a lot of work by essentially unpaid family members, property tax subsidies such as the Williamson Act, and lots of water. Decades of trying has resulted in zero opportunities for farmers and ranchers to develop their lands, too, he says. Cash-poor farmers or their children may be eager to get into the cannabis cultivation or sell out to pot growers as a result. Barnett sees water as the key stumbling block for commercial pot cultivation in San Diego's backcountry. Marijuana growing typically requires hefty water needs. Barnett says his research indicates it takes a gallon a day per plant to yield each pound of harvestable pot, with a mature plant needing up to 10 gallons a day. And that's an expectation he sees as unrealistic in a region with a semi-desert climate and strict water limits supplied by the County Water Authority, particularly during drought situations. One possible solution to this problem could be hydroponics, which can cut water consumption up to 90%, according to Cerna, a company specializing in supplying indoor cultivators. On the other hand, not allowing any legal cultivation hasn't meant that no pot is grown here. Barnett observes, "Just about anywhere in the backcountry where there's a trickle of water, you might find a hidden sunlit hillside potted with pot plants watered by drip lines supplied by pumped water from little hand-dug dams that are often on someone else's land, and that means using someone else's water, too." Water theft by illegal pot growers and massive grows in national forests have long plagued officials. But opponents of legal marijuana growing have voiced concerns over crime and access by children, though the law limits possession and use to adults. One tipster told us that a grower of medical pot near the border had solicited local teens to work in the fields, creating a culture of drug use acceptability. Now, currently, the local medical marijuana dispensaries, some legal, some not, rely largely on cannabis imported from Northern California. Selling recreational marijuana through dispensaries won't be legal statewide until 2018, but even then, cities and counties can opt to just ban dispensary sales as well as growing, much to the frustration of people seeking legal access to weed. The new California law does allow individual households to grow up to 6 marijuana plants, though some areas have limited even that. El Cajon, for instance, recently limited growing to indoors only. But not everyone wants to grow their own marijuana, roll their own joint, and smoke it. Nor does that meet the needs of medical marijuana patients who may want other forms of cannabis, such as liquid drops dispensed under the tongue, edible forms such as cookies, creams, or ointments for pain relief, such as for arthritis patients. Advocates of hemp argue that although it's related to marijuana, hemp can be grown without the active ingredient that causes people to get high. Hemp oil has some medical applications, such as in oils and creams. Hemp fiber is prized for its durability in products ranging from blue jeans to rope. Selling such hemp products is legal in the U.S., but the retailers and manufacturers must import hemp raw materials from growers in other countries. Legalizing growth of hemp and/or cannabis would create a boom in American jobs, advocates argue. But even in California counties and cities that opt to make growing cannabis or hemp legal, along with dispensaries, jumping into these businesses or using marijuana products is still not risk-free. Growing hemp and cannabis, whether medical or recreational, remains illegal under federal law. While the Obama administration took a largely states' rights approach by not enforcing laws against minor use and possession of marijuana or sale through dispensaries in states that have legalized it, it's unknown what Donald Trump's administration will do. His attorney general nominee has been a vocal opponent of marijuana legalization and could crack down on cannabis. Meanwhile, supervisors will weigh in on January 25th, considering whether weed could become the next cash crop in San Diego County. If they vote no, it may not mean the concept goes up in smoke forever, however. The current crop of supervisors includes 4 who will be termed out in 2018 and 2020, leaving the door open for pro-cannabis candidates in future elections.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a presentation by historical author Roger Conley in Alpine, a British farce on stage in La Mesa, and the San Diego State Writers Conference.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including Laurel and Hardy Night in Spring Valley, a California Dreamin' series on immigration and migration in Borrego Springs, a mountain bike ride in Mission Trails, a powwow at Cuyamaca College, Valentine's Teas and Julian, and a salute to La Mesa's local heroes.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present What the Butler Saw, a classic British farce opening January 20th and running through February 19th. When a psychiatrist tries to seduce an aspiring secretary, his botched efforts lead to a comic bedlam involving his insatiable wife, a randy bellhop, a befuddled police officer, and Sir Winston Churchill. For tickets and details, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Each year, over 300 aspiring writers from around the world attend the San Diego State University Writers Conference. This year, the conference will be held January 20th through the 22nd at San Diego Marriott in Mission Valley. The conference was the first to pioneer one-on-one appointments for writers with editors, agents, and other top-tier publishing professionals who can provide direct feedback on your writing. This year's keynote speakers include R.L. Stine, one of the best-selling children's authors in history, J.A. Jantz, a top 10 New York Times best-selling author, Jonathan Mayberry, five-time winner of the Bram Stoker Award, and Sherilyn Kenyon, international and New York Times number one best-selling author of fantasy, horror, and more. For information on fees and registration for the 33rd annual San Diego State University Writers Conference, visit neverstoplearning.net/writers.
You can meet author Roger Conley at the Alpine Library on Saturday, January 21st at 10 a.m. He has written 7 fact-based historical novels, including several that have won awards. His latest is Deep Water, set in the early days of the Cold War and the red-baiting hysteria of the McCarthyism era.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Young Actors Theater will host cabaret nights on Friday and Saturday, January 27th and 28th at the YAT Theater in Spring Valley. The cabaret nights showcase talented YAT members performing musical, dance, and acting performances to benefit the theatrical group. For tickets and details, you can visit yatsandiego.org.
The Anza-Borrego Desert Natural History Association will present a 3-part program titled California Dreamin' on the story of migration and immigration. All 3 parts will be presented on Saturday, January 28th, and will encompass the history of the early Californians, Western women, and the impacts of immigration on Native Americans. For reservations and details, visit the Anza-Borrego Desert Natural History Society website at www.abdnha.org.
Saps at Sea, the local Laurel and Hardy fan club, begins its 39th year with a meeting on Saturday, January 28th at Williams Hall at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the show starts at 7. The evening includes showings of the cartoon Screwball Squirrel, followed by Laurel and Hardy causing mischief in Your Darn Tootin', with live music by Russ Peck and comedian Charlie Chase in Snappy Sneezer. After an intermission and treats, you'll see Them Thar Hills and Tit for Tat, 2 more Laurel and Hardy short films, the latter nominated for an Academy Award.
The largest outdoor ice skating rink in Southern California is open at Viejas Outlet Center through January 29th. Feel the cool Pacific Mountain air on your face while you bunny hop, camel spin, and twizzle your way around our ice rink in Alpine. For details, you can visit viejas.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park will host a concert featuring Courtly Noise on January 29th at 3 p.m., performing Renaissance music. The group began singing madrigals atop Mount Palomar and has since added instrumentalists. For details, visit mtrp.org.
The Native American Student Alliance at Cuyamaca College will host its 3rd annual powwow on Saturday, February 4th from 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. in front of the Communication Arts Complex. The powwow aims to promote Native American heritage with activities including bird singing, a Native singing style of the Kumeyaay people honoring the culture and traditions of local tribes in our region. The powwow will also include arts and craft vendors, food vendors, drums, Native dancers, and more. Admission and parking will be free.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to a guided mountain bike nature ride with a park ranger on the first Saturday of the month, now through June, from 9 to 11 a.m. The next ride will be on Saturday, February 4th, starting at the West Sycamore portion of the park at the east end of Stonebridge Parkway in Scripps Ranch. You may see birds of prey rising on the winds from canyons below as you ride through Beeler Canyon. This 10-mile ride is for moderate to fit riders. If you arrive early, volunteers from the San Diego Mountain Biking Association will help you make adjustments to your bike. Upcoming rides' difficulty will increase a little so you can try new skills and get comfortable with your bike. Be sure to bring plenty of water, sunscreen, and snacks. Wet trails cancel rides. For more information, visit the Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
Acoustic guitarist, singer, and songwriter Jim Earp will perform Hawaiian and Celtic guitar music as well as folk rock songs at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, February 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. Wine and cheese are available for the performance in the winery's cozy back room. For details or to get a full February schedule of events at this venue, you can call or visit sanpasqualwinery.com.
Julian Tea and Cottage Arts will host Valentine's Teas from February 9th through the 14th, with several options for seating times. The set menu is a romantically inspired version of their cottage classic tea, a four-course extravaganza starting with tomato or pumpkin soup with mini cheese scone, then a variety of finger sandwiches and savories, followed by a scone with curd, jam, and whipped cream, and the grand finale is a luscious three-piece dessert tray. A children's tea is also available for children under 12. Vegetarian or gluten-free versions can be prepared with advance notice. For reservation, visit julianca.com and click on the calendar.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce will host its 9th Annual Salute to Local Heroes dinner on February 22nd from 5 to 8:30 p.m. at the Town & Country Resort's Golden Ballroom in Mission Valley. The Chamber will honor heroes chosen by the La Mesa Police Department and Heartland Fire Department. This year's event has an all-that-jazz theme and includes a silent auction and raffle. For tickets and details, visit lamesachamber.com.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Estela de los Rios. She is the executive director of CSA, and she's going to be talking with us today about a very important issue locally, which is getting some help for the homeless. Estela, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
For people who may not be familiar with CSA, can you tell us a little bit about the organization, where it's located, and its mission?
Yes, we are located in El Cajon, California. We've been in existence since 1969, one of the oldest civil and human rights organizations in the entire region of San Diego. And we advocate for the rights of everyone. Our issues are fair housing, human trafficking, and youth mentorship program.
Very good. So housing obviously ties in with the entire homelessness issue. And you contacted us today because you wanted to speak out about what you view as some very serious problems and how the city of San Diego, other communities as well, but particularly the city of San Diego, is dealing with their growing number of homeless. San Diego is now ranked the fourth worst in the nation, with the fourth highest homeless population in the United States, according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Five or six?
Correct. This number is appalling, considering that we are the finest city, so-called San Diego. And it's appalling, but mostly it's very inhumane. And this is the reason why I'd like to speak in regards to this issue.
So give us some examples of what's being done under Mayor Faulkner's leadership and that the city council has basically allowed to go on that is inhumane.
As we all know, this season has been a very rainy season.
Yes.
And our homelessness have had no option but to get cover under a tree or under a freeway or whatever that coverage is. Our homeless have been searching for some warm shelter. Well, contrary, because they do this, they've been receiving citations. Mayor Faulkner not only is not addressing this issue, but add insult to injury, he's giving them citations.
So basically they're criminalizing homelessness instead of opening even a winter shelter, for example,
or getting real help to these people, they're writing citations. We've also seen on the news last year when they had the All-Star Game coming to town, they decided to put up sharp rocks under an overpass where the homeless used to take shelter during storms because they didn't want visitors, these football fans from out of town, to see homeless people camped out there. And then more recently, in the recent storms, it's been all over social media and the news that they've been taking away tents of people who have nowhere else to go and literally putting lives in jeopardy, leaving people out in this cold, cold weather and rain with no tents. In some cases, they even took their sleeping bags.
Yes, and this is inhumane. We're speaking about families. We're speaking about children. We're speaking about families that have gone through some economic crises. All these people have a story. These people deserve some respect. They don't deserve citations or to be criminalized because they want a better quality for themselves. A lot of them need resources. What is the issue? Affordable housing. We don't have affordable housing available. And where it trickles down to is our city government. And I believe it's the mayor's responsibility because it reflects on him. Just looking at the statistics, number four, being the largest city in the entire nation, that should tell you something. That should say how we are treating our homeless population.
So what should be done instead? If you could be mayor or wave a magic wand and suddenly have the mayor see the light and the council, what would you do, Estella?
Because we are a fair housing advocate, I have done many research and also attend many meetings task force with the homelessness. There are different models that we have in the entire nation, and I'll speak about two models. One model in particular has a rotating shelter. What does that mean? That means churches and organizations, and there's plenty of advocates that believe that these homeless families deserve a shelter, deserve resources. Many of them have needs, mental health needs. Many of them have medical needs. So what this rotating shelter would mean is that everyone would take a responsibility and play a role, whether it's a church one month, another church the next month to feed the homeless, another resource church to have a employment fair or to prepare them for employment. Everyone could take a role. Everyone could take a responsible role into giving them another opportunity to become a self-sufficient family. We have another model that I'd like to also refer to in another city. I believe it was Detroit in 2011. They opened up a outreach workers that went out to see and assess what is the needs of our homeless population. What are the resources that they could connect them to? That's an easy assessment. If you can connect resources with the homeless population, just imagine how many homeless families would be able to be on the road again to be self-sufficient, find some housing, find a job, and be self-sufficient on their own. So there are models out there. It's just that the mayor and the city officials have to take the responsibility and have to take an interest. First of all, they don't have an interest in this issue. By giving out citations and criminalizing and ignoring the problem is saying, we don't have a problem. You know, let's just say there is no problem here. And that's not right. That is beyond being inhumane.
Yeah, I mean, every year we're having people literally die on the streets of exposure or illness or things that would be very preventable if they even had at least shelter. And obviously, as you've noted, shelter alone, though, isn't going to get people off of the streets long term, a temporary shelter. It ultimately takes other things like addressing the core reason why they're homeless, whether it's a mental health issue or a substance abuse issue or a loss of a job or a need to learn English or simply the fact that they cannot afford, you know, whatever the minimum housing cost is in the city of San Diego or the county of San Diego.
And you're correct. And the sad part of all this is that we as NGOs have many, many resources in the entire region of San Diego. So there's no excuse why we cannot help the homeless population in our area because we have an abundance of resources.
So you're saying the private sector, the non-governmental organizations like churches and nonprofits, if they all got together and formed some kind of a network, could do what the cities are failing to do?
Correct. And in addition, the cities do have some costs there that I believe they should be responsible in providing some resources. I know that there's more need and there's a demand, but I also know that there's allocations that the cities can make to address our homeless population.
Well, we're even seeing now it's gotten so bad that even the big hoteliers are saying that something should be done about the homelessness because it's bad for tourism.
Right. They're concerned because, as you all know, San Diego, the finest city, tourism city, the industry is very concerned because now tourists will come to San Diego and they will see scenes of homeless people out in the streets. Well, no one should blame themselves but our mayor and the city officials, because this is an issue that is not new to San Diego. It's been here for many years and it's been on the radar, but they turn a blind eye.
Well, and now we're seeing talk about Mayor Sanders apparently doing outreach in Republican circles, some fundraising, about launching a bid to run for governor, and he's positioning himself as a moderate. But what would you say to that?
I would say he's a politician. We knew from the very beginning that this was the main issue, that he doesn't care about the city of San Diego. He just cares about his political career. I know that a lot of us advocates have known this for a while, and he just confirmed it by, I believe, 2 weeks ago, he announced that he was interested in running for the governor of the state. And that just confirmed our beliefs all along that the issues of homelessness or any other issue of the city of San Diego is not what he's interested in.
How do we make housing more affordable?
I believe that every city has an allocated plan. I know this because I work in this arena of fair housing. They have community block grant monies that HUD allocates to every city.
Federal Housing and Urban Development Agency.
Exactly. And those funds are particularly for affordable housing, for all housing assistance. And what our city officials tend to do in the mayors, it's different in every city, but particularly in the city of San Diego, a big chunk of that funding does not go to affordable housing. So this is where it becomes an issue of where do we allocate this money, to affordable housing or to fix potholes?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the cities in East County and the county itself. So we have the county of San Diego, and then within that out here we have the cities of Lemon Grove, La Mesa, El Cajon, Santee. What kind of a job are those entities doing, Estella? Who's doing better than others, and what more needs to happen?
Well, I believe that the homelessness factor is a priority in every city. Sadly, every morning I drive through an area in El Cajon where there's 3/10 of homelessness.
Yeah.
And statistically wide, I know that SANDAG has statistics on hand where the homeless issue has risen. The homeless population migrates from town to town because some towns will refuse to have homelessness and they just run them out of town and they just migrate to another town. So in East County, there is an issue, but not as bad as the city of San Diego.
I should interject here that last year, the San Diego County Grand Jury made a recommendation that all of the cities in East County should do more for the homeless, and some of them responded to those recommendations, and some of them completely ignored them. But one thing that did come out of that is there was an establishment of a regional East County task force on the homeless. And now what's happening is they're sending out, at least in the county, if they send out, say, a sheriff, they'll send out a social worker with them. They're going out and actually trying to talk to some of the homeless people and do a needs assessment, I understand, to see maybe what help they need or what resources they might qualify for. Some of them don't even know, you know, that there might be help available. Do you have any take on how effective that is? Is this just window dressing, or is it really helping in a substantive way, do you think?
I believe that action needs to take place. Doing assessments and asking questions is good, but I also believe that we need immediate attention to our homelessness. They need a short-term, perhaps shelters. They need resources as far as if they need medical help or mental help. Those need to be addressed as well. With every homeless person, as I mentioned, there's families, there's children, and there's lives that are involved.
Right. And actually, a pretty high percentage of them are veterans who've served our country also.
Yes. Sadly, we do receive a lot of calls where we do have homeless veterans that are seeking shelters, and the shelters are just ripping from the seams. There's not enough shelters. So again, our city officials need to do something more about this problem.
So what would you do? They're not here today. I'm sure if they were, they would probably say, gee, it sounds great to say let's help them, but city resources are strained, there's not enough money. What would your answer to that be?
My answer is your obligation under the Fair Housing Act of Housing, Urban, and Development is to provide housing for all, is to not discriminate because of socioeconomic factors and because of challenges. There needs to be monies allocated to have affordable housing. That way everyone has an opportunity to be in a safe environment. And if that takes taking monies away from one program to another, for example, public service, and that has to be done. That has to be done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to address specifically today?
No, I just want to say thank you, Miriam, because homelessness is and should be a priority for the entire region of San Diego.
And Estella, if people want to get more information about the work that CSA is doing or get involved, maybe somebody out there has resources to bring to bear or a facility where they would be willing to open it for the homeless, how can they get in touch with you and where can they get more information?
Please do. 619-444-5700. We would really appreciate any help or any assistance, volunteer work to assist our homeless population.
Estella, if listeners out there are concerned about what the mayor and the city council in San Diego are doing or not doing to help the homeless, what advice would you give them? Do you think that speaking out and letting their voices be heard makes a difference?
Yes, I believe that anyone can contact our city officials, in this case the city mayor, and just say, you know, your responsibility is to the community, and our community needs to be focused in addressing the homeless issue, not making them criminals.
There's a petition also, isn't there, that people can sign? Tell us about that.
Yes, I encourage you to go to www.change.org, and please join us in this petition. Our mayor needs to understand that we're not alone in this fight. We have signatures on this petition, and I encourage you again, change.org, petition for helping our homeless in San Diego.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
More needed rain is forecast for our region, but some storms may cause serious and dangerous problems. This is Gene Carpenter with some tips to prepare for storms and weather them safely. Always keep a battery-powered radio in your home so that you can tune to radio stations if you lose electricity. Check or change the batteries frequently. Keep a flashlight in an easily accessible spot on every floor of your home. Check the batteries monthly and replace them as needed. As a safety precaution before leaving the house on vacation, unplug all electrical appliances except for those lights connected to automatic timers. Secure, remove outdoor patio furniture and yard accessories to keep them from blowing off in a violent wind. Don't go out unless you have to. However, if flooding threatens, seek high ground and follow the instructions of your local firefighters and law enforcement. Never drive across a flooded roadway, since even a small amount of swiftly moving water can sweep a vehicle into the stream. Keep an eye on large trees, even healthy ones, that could damage your house if felled in a storm. Cut them back if necessary. Lightning can travel 10 miles or more, so when the thunder roars, stay indoors. Lightning can travel through metal pipes, phone, and electrical lines, so it's wise to stay off the phone and computer during a thunderstorm and avoid running water. Turn off and unplug major appliances such as computers or TVs if not grounded to avoid risk of a power surge from lightning or after a power outage, which could damage your equipment. Don't forget the car. Have your brakes, tires, and windshield wipers checked by your mechanic. Drive slower in the rain and give plenty of distance between your vehicle and the one in front of you. Now you can regard gathering clouds with a little less trepidation and stay safe.
This is Liz Albert with the official last Chargers report of all time on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. The Chargers left San Diego last Thursday, and fans were outraged. On the Reddit subreddit r/Chargers, fans were beyond upset. Last Wednesday night, a thread was posted that was titled, "Number of Chargers Fans That Will Drop Their Chargers Fandom If and When They Move to LA." Inside, the comments were scathing. Many even said they would stop watching football, like user WillyWonka159, who said, "Trying not to get angry. The NFL doesn't want fans in San Diego? Sucks for us, for me, but that's the way it is. I won't be watching a single football game again. Will not follow the Chargers to LA. Will not choose a new team. Just won't watch football again. Too many good things in life that can fill my time up. Besides, I love my Padres, and any team, whether it's MLS or not, that moves here will get my support and my money. Am I sad? Very much so, but I'm not going to let it bring me down so much. I'm going to live my life as before, just without football." User rwilso7 agreed. Drop the Chargers? Drop the NFL? That should be the universal answer. But the biggest comment came from user rbsd55, who claimed to be a former Qualcomm board member. "If the team moves to LA, I am done. I will never support them or watch them on TV, and most certainly not in person. I've been a season ticket holder and even served on the stadium board. I was on the board when the Chargers first asked for a new stadium. It was a legitimate request because the building has serious deficiencies. But to say they had tried to get a stadium for 15 years is misleading. In that time, the city nearly went bankrupt due to the pension fund crisis. Two mayors resigned, and we went through a serious economic downturn. You need to back out at least 10 years. The city is not blameless, however. The deficit in leadership in this town is bigger than the pension deficit. A deal could have and should have gotten done, but the city leaders sat on their hands for too long. None of them were willing to step up and take the lead from the city side. The mayor's task force was way too little and way too late, and the mayor waited too long to endorse Measure C. All that aside, I am a San Diegan, before a Chargers or NFL fan. As a San Diegan, I am programmed to hate LA. The Chargers, or whatever they choose to call themselves, will be just something else that I hate about LA. I hope Dean and family enjoy watching their team play to empty seats and opposing fans. LA and its fans don't want you or your crappy team. I predict that in a few years, you will sell the team before the bump in value from the move to LA evaporates because the loss in revenue will be too much." End quote. With the move, the Padres and the Gulls are the last professional sports teams in San Diego.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues Free Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.